Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. My name is Dallas, and I have two wonderful authors here with me today. We have Katie Davidson, or KM Davidson, as you will see on her books, and we also have Miss Kelsey Lane. So welcome to the show, girls.
Thanks.
I'm so excited.
Thank you.
Excited to be here.
You guys are here. So we have two wonderful books here. We have The Forgotten Flare, and we have Sundered Heavens. Now these are both out into the world, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. So you can pick them up in different places. Amazon, is that a good place for it, or where would you recommend that we get your books from?
Mine are on my website. I'll send signed versions, and then they're also available on Amazon or Kindle.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'm the same way right now. I've got some special editions of Sundered Heavens available right now, signed, and then you can get them on Amazon as well.
I would love to get both of your websites for our show notes, too. Like as a site.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can put that in there, and then that way when we watch the interview, someone can just click on it and then go purchase that if they would like. So welcome to Indie Talk, guys. So this is what we're going to talk about, what it's like to be an indie author, the struggles of being an indie author, the great things about being an indie author, and what we can do to help educate other future indie authors so that way they can also publish their books. So there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about today, but the first thing I want to start out with is dedications. I feel like the dedication is such a big part of the book, right? You open it, you have your trigger warnings if they have them, you have other different information like publishing, but then really the first thing that you get to is, what is this book meant for? Who is this book meant for, right? Whether it's a single person or a full group of readers. So, Katie, your dedication is to the readers who loved their English classes, who enjoyed reading the tragics, the greats, the epics, to the ones who went on to major in English literature, creative writing, and the likes. This one's for you. Can you tell me a little bit about your dedication and how you chose that?
Yeah. So for my main series, I flip-flop between serious and funny. My first debut series that's been going on. But this one is super special to me for a lot of reasons. I've been working on book two, so I've actually been working on a little bit of like an author note at the end. I'm an English major. I'm both creative writing, and I got my master's in English literature. And I like to say that this book is all of the books that influenced me to become an English major come together. You'll find heavy influence of Greek mythology. The drama of the gods is the main point of this entire duology, and that is obviously, like, you read Greek mythology and you've read a lot of Greek mythology, everyone's usually angry because Zeus had sex with the wrong person.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
It all comes down to that as the source of the drama, and this is very, very similar. Is that people are starting relationships with people they shouldn't be. And that was a huge influence for me. And then also a lot of different authors that I've read over the years, ones that aren't known that I studied for my master's, people like John Milton. There's a lot of John Milton symbolism in this book that I took from Paradise Lost. So I know there are so many readers out there that ever since TikTok and BookTok became big, it pulled people in who maybe weren't readers when they were young. And that is a lot of the people I meet talking about how things like ACOTAR and Throne of Glass pulled them into reading like it never did when they were young. But there are so many of us out there who have been huge readers since we were really young and do enjoy those Greek tragics and the epics, and we like to get our feelings hurt. And I think like that was what I really wanted to speak to, is to show people like a big goal with this was I wanted to pull in those who like high and epic fantasy, but who have also come to like some of the lower fantasy romanticy because of the romance side. And I wanted to show you could combine both. And I wanted to call out to those who have been in that spot. And I think a lot of the messaging of a big messages in this is be who you are and don't worry about being who others expect of you. And I think that calls a lot to the creatives out there, is we were told, probably a lot of us were told, that this isn't, being a creative isn't going to work for you, and to be something else.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and art is in the eye of the beholder, so it just depends on who's looking at whatever it is that you're creating, deciding if they feel like it's something that's beautiful in their eyes. So good for you for that. That's beautiful. And what would you recommend for other indie authors when they are making their dedication? Like, how can they find other inspiration?
I think it really comes down to setting the tone of your book. Because obviously there's so many people who dedicate it to family members, those they've lost, husbands, partners, all of that good stuff. And I think it sets the tone in the book. I think you going into it reading, it can really be such an intro. Like obviously we have synopsis and we have blurbs and we have tropes and all these things. But I think a dedication can really be used to set the tone of what they're about to go into. Like I feel people reading that dedication would be like, oh, this is epic. Like this is a big fantasy. Where people reading something else that's maybe like a contemporary cowboy romance that's like more on the humor side of things like that. I think, you know, you get those funny ones of like the girls who just want to ride a cowboy. Like you get those dedications and that sets the tone. And one of my best friends, she's an author as well. And she has one dedication that was, you know, for all the women who have ever been underestimated by a man. And that is the tone of like her book. So I think it really is like coming to set the tone. You just have to make that decision of like, okay, are we going to use the acknowledgments to thank the special people in our lives, or do we want to put them in the dedication to set the tone, or do I want to use this as an opportunity to really like kind of give a preview of like what you'll expect from me in this book?
Yeah, that's incredible. And Kelsey, your dedication as well, it's a little bit different. So to the teachers who encouraged me to keep writing at 17, this one's for you, Miss Kelly. How is Miss Kelly today? Do you keep in contact with her? Does Miss Kelly know that there's a book dedicated to her?
She does. Okay, so my book actually started out as a short writing assignment for my creative writing class when I was 17. The first chapter and prologue, like combined, I kind of restructured it the way that it is now in the book, but that was my assignment. I obviously rewrote it a little bit, but I turned in that assignment. She commented on it at the end, told me to keep writing. And that's something that I took to heart. And this book was 15 years in the making because I like wrote a book, but then I put it down, started reading again, picked it back up, changed a lot about it, and then published it. But she did not know it was dedicated to her until I surprised her. I set up a local news station to like make it look like she was being interviewed for something for the news.
Cute.
And then I showed up in the middle of the interview and told her, you know, I hadn't seen her probably since school or shortly after I graduated. And so I showed up and I was just like, hi, do you remember me? She's like, oh my gosh, yes, which was crazy enough. But she told me that she still uses some of my assignments in her class to like showcase what she's looking for certain things. And she really was like my favorite teacher in school. I can recall a lot of other teachers, like most of them were English teachers that I liked, but her and one other English teacher were like my two go-to. If you asked me my favorite teacher, that would have been my answer. But she's so much like me now that like when I was in school, I'm like, wow, I've become more like her, not even realizing it when I saw her again. But she was blown away that I dedicated a book to her. I like gave her the book, signed it and everything like in that interview. And so she made a really big impact on my life because she was one of the reasons I kept wanting to go back to school, was because I wanted to go to that class. I was a big like, I want to go to school. I'm bullied. I have a lot of people that are like mean to me. But that was the one reason why I wanted to go to school, was because of my English teachers. In eighth grade, it was Mrs. Alexander. In high school, it was Miss Kelly. So it was like, there was really no question that this book would be dedicated to her simply because I kept writing because she told me to. Going into like my second book, it's more dedicated towards the people who kept me writing after that. And it's my lollipop gals. In my book, the main male character has a lollipop almost at all times. So I call them my lollipop gals. And they are the people who encouraged me to keep writing and were my alpha readers. And I didn't know that's what they were until somebody told me what an alpha reader was. But they were my alpha readers. They're my lollipop gals. And I dedicated my second book to them because they kept told me to keep going, regardless of what was happening, pushing me through. So that's where my dedications come. I don't know what it'll be for the future books because my book is 5 series. I've got, I don't know if you can see it, a tattoo of what they're going to be.
Cute.
So, yeah, I don't know what the rest of them are going to be, but I think it'll come to it when we bring it around.
And you have your shirt as well. It also has your characters. Yes. I know because I have all of your books with all of the characters on them.
Yep, mine are all Ryan here.
And Caleb and Kyler, like there they all are.
Yep. They're all here.
Oh, that's so cute.
Thanks.
And what would you say to maybe the younger generation who are still in junior high or high school that are wanting to write, maybe even if they do or do not have one of those, you know, Miss Kellys in their life, what would you say to them to keep writing?
I would say that like the biggest thing that kept me going is like the people that are going to read your books are going to love your books. There are also going to be those that don't. And you have to ignore the people that don't, because most of the time you're going to have, my biggest thing that I have to remind myself all the time is the star rating on Goodreads is 5 stars. If it is above 3 stars, that still means most of your people really liked your book, regardless of what they rated it. And it's hard as somebody who gets easily downed by criticism, but there's always going to be somebody who's going to critique your work in a way that you don't like. They're going to not like your work. They're going to think it sounds too young, too whiny, too annoying, as we were just talking about another character. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that there's always going to be something that a lot of people don't like, but then there's also going to be that group of people that love what you're writing. So don't get discouraged by one bad review, one bad critique, one bad grade. Keep trying, keep going after it. If you like to do it, you'll find your niche and you'll find the people that will like to read your stuff. Yeah. Just keep going.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that really hits hard. That really hits home because I mean, there's books that I love with everything that I have that people that I know don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But even though they don't like that book and they will critique that book, I will fight for them. And I didn't even write that book.
Mm-hmm.
I will fight for that book as if I wrote it myself. So there, yeah. Even if, you know, there are people out there that don't like your book, there's going to be another person next to them that's like, I would die for these characters.
Yeah.
Right? But and you're not, when you're writing, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not an author, you guys are the author, so you tell me, I would think that we are not writing necessarily for all of the people, right? Because again, everyone has their own opinions and their own thoughts. You are writing for you, you are writing for your story, and you are writing to bring your characters that are in your mind and your heart to life into the page.
Mm-hmm.
So really that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So another thing that I want to kind of get into, speaking of characters, is character artwork. I know that you both have some beautiful artwork on your social media. This is where I've seen it, in your books, in your book art that you have sent. It is wonderful. What would you say to other indie authors who are just starting out on the route that they should go to create their character artwork? Because I know that there is a lot of controversy or a fine line between how to market your book, how to stay in budget, because as an indie author, you are paying for this all out of your pocket, but also making sure we're making decisions that are going to be in good manner. And this is something that I am still learning and educating myself on as well. So I don't have an opinion quite yet on this. So I would like to hear your guys' thoughts. Katie, we can start with you. What do you think? Character artwork.
Yes. So I will say with my first book, by the time it released, I had a single piece, maybe two, of character art. Yeah, that was when I first started off. I will always say, like, I believe, like, before release, if you can and you have the financial means, really do try and get at least one piece of character art that showcases something. Maybe it's, like, one of the main characters and if it's fantasy and it's their powers, or something that showcases the couple, something that's easy to reuse over and over again. I tell people, like, some people will say, like, a portrait is the best, but I'm like, if you can get a scene, like, one of the best scenes in the book, purchase that. Because in the end, we are all such visual people, and there are people out there who can't see when they read, like some can. So that, I think I've learned, helps a lot of those people be able to visualize before they're reading as well. So I always say, if you can get at least one, try and spin it somehow. There are so many different artists out there. You don't have to get something that looks super mega realistic or super mega like it's in a video game. There are so many people out there too who are just starting, who have lower prices because they just want to get as much out there as they can to try and showcase themselves. Give those people that chance, because I feel like I did for a lot of my character art. Some of the ones that got the most popular, the most excitement around them was on the lower end of the budget. And I say, try and create a budget for yourself. Once you start to see kind of the artists that you like, follow them. A lot of people will do pre-mades that are cheaper than what they normally price. So it'll just be a pose that they chose. And if you see one that's like, okay, this is totally this character or these two characters, then you can purchase that for a lower end. And usually, like, they make free edits, like changes in hair color, changes in eye color, all that good stuff. And then also sometimes there's great giveaways that you get if people are collabing with each other. Like, a lot of artists will come to collab. So it sucks because it's one of those things that's just like, God, it is so nice. It is such a privilege to be able to pay for that. But if you can swing it somehow, even after your first book publishes and you just put aside the first, like, some of that, you know, return to pay for your first piece of character art, I think it's worth it. As someone who's a marketer in my full-time job, it's just one of those things that the payoff isn't immediate. It's like, it's not like a paid ad where, you know, you pay for an Instagram ad, you see that payoff immediately. In the marketing world, we call this organic traffic. You have to pay for something to put it out there, and the payoff is eventual. I will say, so many times my character art has paid off in some way, shape, or form, whether it's on a video, a reel, whether it's in person. This event I went to, one of my biggest pieces for Sundered Heavens, was the main attraction, pulling people into my booth to buy books. So I think, like, in the end, it does pay off. It's just one of those costs you have to eat. And if you can eat it, do it. But also don't go crazy, because I have gone crazy recently and I've had to really force myself to pull back. So,
yeah. So some of your art, like this one, is that? Okay, that's
yes. Paperwork. Oh, yeah, they both are. That should be both.
So this one was one of my favorites. And then this was another one that I thought was really cool. And I think this is kind of what you're talking about with, like, showing her powers, things like that, like a scene from the book. So that way when they're reading that scene, they can kind of see it as well.
Yeah.
And I love that you both went entirely different directions on what type of character art you did, right? Mm-hmm. You made bookmarks with each character, so now I can pick my favorite character, and if it's changing, because I know sometimes when I'm reading character, my favorite character changes throughout the book, so I'm like, oh, I'm actually mad at this person, so I'm gonna go to this person. So I think that's really memorable. And then you chose, like, character art that I can display either in my book when I'm reading it or sharing it with somebody, or I can display on my bookshelf. So I love that you both went a different route. So it doesn't have to be, like, set in stone. Yeah. This is the character art that we do. This is the type what we do. There are options, right? You can do stickers, which might be, you know, cheaper when you have an artist create it and then distribute them or have them made and printed. So you can do art like this. So there are so many options.
Oh, yeah. That's why I say get, like, a piece that is just easy copy paste. Like, sometimes with those portraits, or I even have scenes, like, if I were to go in there and erase the background of the first one you showed, it's just the style of it is so easy that I could probably put them on a bookmark if I really wanted to. I could take them out, put them on a sticker. So if you are trying to, like, save the budget and be able to use it in so many different things, work either, it's the style of the art. Usually those, like, more 2D are super easy to pull out and put on other things versus the more, like, depth one. That's just the second one is a really good example. And yeah. I think, like, if you're able to, like, repurpose for different marketing things, like stickers, bookmarks, character art print, whatever it might be, I think it's really good to be able to work with an artist who will also work with you. There's one I've worked with where every time I do, like, portrait style stuff, she will give me the version without a background at all so that I could use them in different settings or in different social media posts or even things like that. And you can like move them around and you could just do their like bust up or you could do like the whole thing. So
that's sad. Yeah, it's so beautiful. Like truly, those are gorgeous. And this was by Artie Wings. Is that the artist that we are crediting today?
Yes.
Artie Wings, yes. We see you. You did a great job.
She was great. I love it. There's so many artists that I'm like, I can't wait to work with you again.
Yeah.
But I will say for Sundered Heavens, I got to work with a lot of different artists. And I think like one thing I didn't anticipate was I created a list of scenes that I wanted done from Sundered Heavens. And I created like a snippet of the scene. So I took it from the book, put it in a document. And when I was looking for artists to help with the special edition and to create these scenes, I sent them the doc. And I was like, pick the one you like the most or that speaks to you the most. Smart. And I think that is why so many of these pieces for Sundered Heavens turned out so well is because these artists picked the scenes they wanted to do. And I think when the artist really does connect with the scene, they're able to put just a little bit more into it. And even like some of them were like, okay, I'm doing this. Like when I was working with Artie Wayne's, all this stuff, like all I told her was it was an office basically. And that was it. And she's like, okay, is there a bookcase behind them? And I'm like, there could be. And she's like, what's on the bookcase? And I was like, well, what could be on the bookcase? She's like, I think you've got more gothic. So I think like this would be cool if we put a skull. And are there any titles for books that would be in your world? And she's like, you look close. There's some titles on the books that we put that are like little Easter eggs. And like, it was just so cool to have that experience where an artist is putting that much effort into
it. Them.
Yeah.
That is so, I didn't even notice that there was like little titles on there. That's so fun.
It's just small little That's details amazing. Like that.
Yeah. That's incredible. And Kelsey, tell me about your character art and your thoughts on making character art versus not making it or getting it a different way. What do you think?
Well, all of the character art that you have, I made myself. I did all of the character bookmarks. I actually did my own covers and I did my stickers as well. I didn't have the funds to hire somebody and I've always been a creative person. So I was like, I'm just going to do what I can, what I know how. All of my characters are based off of somebody I know or an actor I know that I thought in my head when I was writing, this person looks like this person. Like this character looks like this person that I've seen before in a role similar to this or not even. Coladon is a character. He's the black one, the black bookmark. And he's based off of Josh Holloway from Lost. And
I love that.
Tame it. So it's like Woody Harrelson and Josh Holloway mixed together.
Yeah, you can see it with the hair.
Mm-hmm. And then I have all of the ones for book two as well. Like I have different, but this one is another one that I did myself too.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, yes, it's a dragon. So there's dragons in my books, if you didn't know. But all of the characters I made, I think I made twice as many for book two because there's more characters introduced. However, I did get into more character art and hiring artists. For my first book, I'm in the process of doing special editions and I hired 6 different artists to do overlays in the book. And I like picked the scenes. I was like, this is the scene, whatever you want to pick in the scene, go for it. And most of them, there was 2 portraits of the 2 MMCs, Caleb and Kyler. And then there's one of Kyler and Rayleigh, one of Caleb and Rayleigh, one of her with her dragon. And then there's another one of a scene that's very like, it's like a healing scene, but it's a close-up of what's happening with the hands. So it's no characters, it's just a close-up of the hands. And I thought it was really cool. And then I'm also getting, I found an artist when I was looking for artists who's going to do end papers in the cover. So I've been working on end papers in the cover and they are a big cost. They are something that I right now am lucky enough to afford because I have a job that I work from home, but it pays really well. And so I have the ability to, you know, pay for these extra things. And hopefully when all of that is said and done, I will have people who purchase the book and pay back for that art that I made.
Right.
But the details that have gone into these end papers are insane. And my artist knows what she's doing. Like she can translate my words into the most beautiful piece that I have ever seen. I wonder if I could find it really quick because I don't have it printed yet because it's going to be end papers, but I just posted some of them here. Let's see if it'll show anything. This is the one I just got.
Shut up.
Look at that.
And these are from book two.
Stunning.
So, like, she, like, four dragons, five characters. It was a pretty penny. But, like, it's a pivotal scene in the book. And it's going on one of the end papers. And then the other one, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find that one as fast, because that one just came in. But the other one that she did, it's like there's a castle in the background, and it's this, like, the world that they're set in. And they're stuck in, I don't know if you've ever heard of a tidal lock with a planet. Basically, the moon is in tidal lock with us. We only see one side of the moon. We never see the dark side of the moon, right? Their planet is stuck in a tidal lock with their sun. So it doesn't change. Like, if you're in one place the whole time, you don't get sunrise, sunset, daytime, nighttime. You get one of those four. So it's permanent twilight in the world where they're at the castle. So there's, you know, a sunset going on in the background. And then he's got her pinned up against a tree because he's trying to break down her shields. It looks like he's going to kiss her, but he doesn't. He's just trying to break her shields. So it's very fun to try and, like, describe to the artist. Because, like, I described the scene to a T and I was like, no, it's not right. And I was like, okay, let me get my friends in on this. I literally posed my friends who are married. I was like, okay, this is what I'm going for. Can you do this? And she nailed it. Like, just got it. As soon as I sent that picture, she's like, all right, perfect. I got this. And nailed it. I'm going to see if I can find that one while we're talking about other things. But it was one of my favorite pieces that she's done. And it will be the two characters in that scene. Because it's end paper, so it's like the whole thing. But they're on one side of it and the castle's on the other. They're going to be like the Kelsey Lane, these are my books, like, poster that I have at book events when I go. So I love it so much.
I cannot wait to see them. I cannot wait. And do you guys have your character art for sale, like, on your website as well? Is that something that people can purchase, or is there a way that they can get this art, or should they go through the artist?
I probably will eventually, but I haven't put it up yet.
Okay. Yeah, I have a couple of my pieces for sale, especially when I have extra after, like, events, I'll start to list them. I don't necessarily see a lot of people getting them, though, because part of the costs of, like, printing, I'll include in pricing the books that are on my site for sale, like the signed copies and stuff.
Yeah, okay.
So that I usually include, like, two pieces of art per book. So, like, I tell people all the time, if you get all three of my other series, you're getting, like, six pieces of art.
Yeah.
And I do give them at events, too. So typically, I'll do, like, I'll sell them at events for, like the size you have. I have, like, $3 a pop. Or I do bundles, too. Kind of same thing. If you buy, like, a collection, like, you get, you know, six pieces of art. Or you get, like, three pieces of art, depending on which bundles you're getting or something like that. So,
yeah. And I love that. And that's a really big reason as well to go out of your way to purchase from an indie author, because you are getting fun stuff in that book, right? You're getting thought and love into it, versus, not that you shouldn't purchase your, you know, traditional books that you want to read, but when I go to the bookstore,
the colors, look at that. You know,
they do look like they're going to kiss.
Good.
You're right.
As they should.
They should.
Like, the details in the castle, like,
oh my gosh.
I know, that's stunning.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it. 10 Sorry. Copies. Yes.
I love that piece so much.
Version.
Yeah, like on a big billboard.
Yep, exactly.
Agreed.
Just a whole mural on my wall.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just getting painted.
It'll be the new background. It'll be back here.
Oh, yes, exactly.
It'll be one of the frames. Oh, I love that. So the final thing that I want to talk to you guys about, which I think is maybe it's a struggle, maybe it's not, maybe I'm reading into it wrong, but trying to write a novel on its own is a lot of work, right? It takes a long time, you have to reread it. How do you make that work with a 9-to-5, right? And then what do you recommend to other indie authors who are trying to also make it work while doing their 9-to-5? Like, I have a 9-to-5 and I podcast, and it takes a ton of time, and I type sometimes, but it's not, I don't even think it's near as much as literally sitting down and writing a novel. So, Kelsey, we'll start with you this time.
Okay. When I was first writing my book, I can't remember what job I had. I have jumped jobs so many times because I just couldn't find one that, like, really, I don't know, I was passionate about, I guess. But, like, I've always wanted to work from home. I've always wanted to do things, you know, on my own. And when I was first writing, it was really hard to find time. But I think the job that I had, I was able to, like, sit at the computer anyways. So I just brought mine with me. And I was like the front desk person for, I lived in LA when I was writing my first book. So I was, it was like greeting people as I came in, but the office wasn't very busy. So it was just like every time somebody in the office would come in, usually there wasn't visitors. So I took my computer to work, but I'm also the biggest night owl. So I will go to work during the day and I will stay up until 3 a.m. writing if I have that inspiration. It really depends on where I'm at in the book. Right now, I'm struggling with book 3 is what I'm on now because it's the beginning of the book, but something super tragic happened at the end of book 2 and we're leading into book 3 with those tragedies and the other dangers of the world. So it's like I slowed it down on purpose because there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered and my character needs answers. Like Rayleigh needs the answers. So I was like, okay, we're gonna process the grief that happened at the end of book 2. We're going to move into her getting answers to her questions because the grief led to more questions. And then we're going to bring in what the plot of this story is. Even though we've already had trickles of it in the beginning, like this plot is insane of the entire story. So this book is like the middle book of the 5-book series. Those are always really hard anyways.
Yeah.
Like second books are hard, but people said that my second book was better than my first book. So now I'm on the third book and I'm like, okay, now I have to do that again. And you're telling me that it's going to be harder? Great. But finding time to do that hasn't been as difficult. It's been making the time, making the constant effort for me to actually focus on the book because I'm like, I don't want to write this, but I need to write this. I don't want to, but I need to focus on these things. And so sometimes I'll just be researching, you know, how somebody handles grief. I've talked to like 7 different people about how they felt during grief because I've only lost grandparents. So they aren't as connected to me as what my character has lost. She's right. Lost her dad, her sister, a friend. Like she's lost so much that I'm like, I don't know how to deal with that. So I've been talking to people who have lost their mom or their dad or a sibling or something to figure out how that affects them. What's really hard is that my character is a twin. So it's like not only is she her sister, but they did everything together because they're twins. And this happens in like the prologue. You find out that she loses her sister, right? So like that's not really a spoiler, but like finding the time to research the grief, finding the time to research how it affects everyday life. That's more so what I have to find time to do. And like my job technically is 9 to 5, but I work from home and I don't have a lot to do. It's not hard for me to find the time. It's hard for me to focus and make the time to be for my book instead of being on my phone or reading. And, you know, both are things I love to do. So I just, now I just moved into my own place and I feel like I'm focusing more on writing, which is great, but it is really a delicate balance of not just having the time, but making the time for me. Anyways, I don't know how it is for everybody else, but yeah, for me, that's what it is.
That's fair. Katie, what do you think? How do you juggle with your 9 to 5 and your writing?
Yeah, so I think like for me, always try to, because this is a big one that I get asked so many times from so many people, because I'm very transparent with how much I write and how many words I write. And that's a big deal for a lot of my readers. I've been called insane by some of my friends and my readers because of how fast I can write. So for me, I like once created a video about like 10 things to help get, you know, 10,000 words in a day or 5,000 words in a day. I think it's just really, it is about kind of like not just finding the time, but like you kind of said too, is like honing in and finding the focus to like sit and like really dive in. And I think people don't realize that, like some people aren't self-aware to realize like you have time, but it's finding the time to sit down and actually like zone in and really get into what you're trying to do, especially as fantasy writers. Some days things are fast and you got a fun little banter scene going on with the whole cast. And there's some days where you have the plot heavy chapters where you've got to unravel something you've been building for books. And that's something that happened for me recently in my 4th book when I was writing it. And that's something that's happening for me in the 2nd book of the duology. So I always tell people you have to create your time. First of all, you would be shocked. Look at your calendar. Even if you don't use a calendar, look at a calendar, time block. When you sit down and time block the things you actually do, it hurts you to see how much time you have open, because you know what you've done in those times that's open. You're doom scrolling probably, or you're sitting down and, I hate to say it, you watch TV. That is something I've sacrificed to write, is TV shows. People tell me all the time, have you watched this show? Are you watching the show? I was like, I can't. I have to choose if I'm going to read, I'm going to write, or I'm watch a TV show. I have so many comfort shows that I watch because there's days I just want to veg out and not have to think about anything. So I put on like New Girl or The Office or Always Sunny or something like that to watch. But I've seen it so many times that I know it's going to happen. So I don't watch a lot of new TV shows. I just keep up with the ones I've watched. And then I also say create a space. If you start to struggle to find a time to write or the focus to write, I tell people, don't do it in your bed. If you can, don't do it in your bedroom. Don't do it on the couch. Truly, like, sit down at your, if you don't have a desk, sit at your dinner table, sit somewhere where you can dedicate focus, because your brain is automatically going to associate what you're doing in a certain spot the minute you sit down. So if you're in your bed, you're going to get tired. If you're on the couch, you probably watch movies, TV, just relax. So you're going to relax. Things aren't going to flow. So trying to find a space to actually dedicate to that is really good, I think. And then sometimes, like, something that I've recently found for me, someone who works from home full time as well, is to get out. Go to a coffee shop, go to a bookstore. Like, I'm lucky in Arizona, we have the Bookish shop, which, if you don't know what that is, that's the Bookish Boxes physical bookstore. And they're a coffee shop and a bookstore. I love the staff. They're so great. All of them are so into books, and they talk to you at the coffee table, like at the coffee bar, and the vibes in there are so incredible. Like, truly, like a dream. Like a it feels like a fantasy bookstore, and it's just like getting somewhere where those vibes are kind of just rolling is really great for me. For someone who works from home full time, where my desk is just not cutting it anymore because there's other things I get distracted with at home now, or I just find that I'm like blanking, and I find like if I can plug in somewhere else and focus, and there's quite literally nothing else for me to be doing in that spot except do the writing. So it is really about finding small little spaces, and no one's saying you have to sit down for 3 hours and write. Like, if you've got little 30 minute spots, use it. Like, for me, I'm one of those people where like, I don't need an hour for lunch. I need 15 minutes to like warm up the food, eat. I've got 45 minutes then. If you have a lunch, I know so many people, like, I don't have any children, but I have a lot of friends that are not just authors, but they have full-time jobs and they're full-time mothers. And I'm like, you are doing the Lord's work out here.
It's a lot. Yes.
You've got so many full-time jobs going on. And like, I know so many of my friends, like, bath time, they're sitting there on their phone writing, or they're on their iPad writing, or they have kids that are in sports or physical events. And like, I have a friend, her daughter's, you know, in, you know, training for like Olympic level sports, but at her events, she's sitting there like writing on her iPad when she gets a chance. When her daughter's not up, she's typing or plotting or doing stuff. So it's like finding those small little spaces is like, if you want to write and you want this book out, like, you're going to have to dedicate those moments, and it's going to be hard. It's going to be tiring. You're going to be tired, and there's going to be things in your life you're going to have to sacrifice to, you know, shift out. Like they say, there's only three parts of your life you really have, between like social, family, work, passions, hobbies, and you have to pick three. And I'm a full believer in that, because if you try to fit all of it, you're gonna burn out. So I try to just give myself goals. Like every month I'm like, okay, bare min, I need to see my one best friend and go do something with her out of the house once a month, bare minimum. I need to like call my parents on this day. I need to do small little things here. But otherwise, like, my social life definitely diminished significantly when I started to really dive into authorship. But I'm okay with that. It made my circle smaller in a very good way, to people who are very supportive. And I think it's just one of those like necessary evils, is to figure out like who are your people. And it does narrow things down. And I don't go out and like, I don't go out and party. I don't go out and drink. I don't do any of that stuff anymore. But for me, I tell people this all the time, I've never felt more myself being an author now and having given up some of those things. And I think it's like, if you love writing and you want to be an author, it sucks to have to give up that stuff and it's scary, but you are going to feel more like yourself when your book is out there and you're talking about your books and you're talking about just books in general with people. So I always tell people, like, you're gonna have to give up a couple of things, but it's possible. And you do have to just sit down and figure out what your goal is, not just as an author, but as a person, individual as well.
Yeah. And I feel like that makes perfect sense. So, like, you just set a timer. You could set a timer. You could block it out in your calendar, right? You could do it while you're taking a break at work. Like, there are lots of different options that people have. And it just, you just have to push through. You have to push through the hard scenes, right? You have to push through the time where you want to doom scroll. You have to do all of those things. I believe in you both. I know you both can do it. You're going to get through the scene. You're going to make it through. And then eventually it will be out to the world for everyone to read and experience that. That is fabulous. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out with me today. This has been wonderful. And I hope that it helps lots of future indie authors with their writing journey so that way they can be a part of this community as well.